Anger is a manifestation of a deeper issue, and that, for me, is based on insecurity, self-esteem, and loneliness. Guess who said that? International model and pop icon Naomi Campbell. So you can only imagine how the rest of us may feel when it comes to loneliness. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we delve into what it's like to be lonely in KC with our guests who include resident psychologist Dr. Bruce Lease and a former journalist for The Pitch who wrote an article titled, "Can a Guy Just Find Some Friends Around Here?" We'd like to know just how lonely you are as well in the Kansas City metro area and how you cope with that loneliness. On today's program, you can be alone, but you don't have to be lonely. Join us on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Something many of us often do by choice. We call it alone time. We tell people, leave me alone, a literal alternative to the company of people. Loneliness, however, is an entirely other matter. Loneliness can happen in the middle of a crowd in a city full of people. Loneliness can sometimes leave some of us feeling as if we have few choices except to be alone. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today's topic is simply Lonely in KC, and joining us now is journalist Matt Pierce, author of a Pitch article titled, "Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here?" He joins us from his new home in Los Angeles. And also joining us is regular contributor Dr. Bruce Lease, a professor of family medicine at the University of Kansas, who will speak on the psychology of loneliness today and speak on addictions next week, so you should definitely check that out. Welcome, Dr. Bruce Lease and Matt.
Thank you. How you doing?
And we're also joined by Monica Kilpatrick Johnson, a sociologist from Washington State University who specializes in social and psychological processes in adolescence and the transition to adulthood. Dr. Kilpatrick, welcome to the show. Kilpatrick Johnson.
Good morning.
Rather. Welcome to the show. We'll begin with Matt. Matt, this was your last article you wrote for The Pitch. What made you want to explore loneliness in KC?
It was a topic that I was naturally interested in, it because it's something that affects your everyday life. When I was living in Kansas City, I didn't really think of it as loneliness at the time. It's more solitude or isolation. I was living in sort of in the West Plaza, Westport area, and I was living by myself. And you know, that's something you can do in Kansas City. Rents are pretty cheap. You know, you can have a decent place for like 400, 500, 600, $700 or whatever, and it's great. I didn't want to have a roommate, but I spent a lot of that time living by myself. And I realized as I spent the last year just working in Kansas City, I wasn't meeting that many people. You know, I was going out and doing stuff around town, but I was finding it hard, you know, on weekends to find certain people that would go and hang out. You know, I had friends in the city who were a little bit older or who were married or in relationships or, you know, having kids. And, you know, they were sort of retreating more and more into domesticity. And, you know, I'm still, you know, I'm 27. I still want to go out and I still want to see the city. And I was finding this pretty hard.
What brought you to KC in the first place? That's a question that I always get even today. What brought you here?
I actually grew up about an hour outside the city in Cass County, and I moved to Kansas City after I graduated from Mizzou with my journalism degree because I had an internship very briefly with the Kansas City Star, and I just kind of stuck there after that.
You went to Missouri for journalism school, huh?
Yes, sir.
Horrible place, horrible place. Some people from other places often mention feeling like an outsider. Do you feel like an outsider now that you live someplace else? You've moved to Los Angeles. We should point that out.
I don't know if that's true anymore. I mean, the thing about Kansas City is that you'll have a lot of people who are from there, but, you know, you go to a Los Angeles or a New York or any place that's a world capital like that, and to a certain extent, everyone's an outsider there. I even quoted somebody in my article who talked about, you know, when she made the move from New York to Kansas City and, like, the different forms of loneliness she had. You know, she felt more like an outsider in Kansas City in that she had to break in, but in New York, you know, they were all feeling like outsiders together, which was his own kind of frenetic bonding experience. So I don't know. The city, Los Angeles in particular, compared to Kansas City, you know, it's so big and it's so just diverse, different neighborhoods everywhere. You can get lost doing anything, but I think the nature of the city makes that kind of expected, and so it's more, it feels more natural, if that makes sense.
But having said that, I share the opinion of actor Jason Schwartzman as a Los Angeles native about Los Angeles and its layout, having to drive everywhere. It's a very lonely place. It can be a very lonely place, an isolated city full of neighborhoods that are kind of autonomous on their own.
Right.
Having to drive places, listening to radio, et cetera. How are you experiencing Los Angeles now?
Actually, you know, I live pretty close to work, so I'm not having to deal with the commutes, which I think is something a lot of people I deal with Los Angeles. But, you know, that's something that a lot of people identify with Kansas City, too. You know, they'll come into downtown from Johnson County, Overland Park, Olathe. You know, people spend a lot of times in their cars. You know, they don't live in these highly dense apartment complexes. They'll live, you know, in the suburbs, in separated housing. There's not a lot of shared communal space. And to a certain extent, Los Angeles is Kansas City accelerated on a much more massive scale. But I think the same problems of, you know, how do you meet people? Where do you run into people? You know, how are you going to get about the city? You know, how are you going to spend your time in the day? How much human friction are you going to have that's going to turn into these personal relationships? You know, how much of that are you going to get? And I think those are problems that are actually shared between Los Angeles and Kansas City. And obviously, there are different circumstances. You know, I feel the sense around Kansas City is that it's much more family-oriented. It's a little bit more conservative. You know, people, arts people or, you know, intellectuals or whatever will gripe about having to pick their way around a little bit more to find stuff that they're looking for. But in terms of structure and just the structure of society and the structure of life and your social networks and the way you meet people, they're not that different.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. We're talking about loneliness, particularly as it pertains to the KC metro area. We're on with journalist Matt Pierce, author of a Pitch article titled "Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here?" About loneliness in KC. He joins us from his new home in Los Angeles. And we have regular contributor Dr. Bruce Lease, a professor of family medicine at KU, and sociologist Monica Kilpatrick-Johnson. They'll be chiming in about loneliness in just a moment. But meanwhile, Kansas City, are you lonely or do you choose to be alone? Do you sometimes find our metro area a lonely place or not? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We may be talking about loneliness today, but you don't have to be alone. You can join the conversation. Once again, that number is 816-235-2888. We're going to defer to our psychologist and sociologist now. Dr. Lease, welcome once again to Central Standard. What is loneliness from a psychological perspective?
Thank you, Jablani. Always a pleasure to be here. As I say all the time, everything we feel is part of a state of mind, and loneliness to a large extent is a state of mind. It is particularly when there's a discrepancy between our real and ideal situation. We all want to belong, but if the discrepancy is if I want friends and I don't have them, or if I want to be with people and I'm not with people, then I'll feel lonely. If I don't really want to be with people, if I want to sit alone and read and I am alone, I won't feel lonely. So loneliness comes from thinking I should be with people, I should belong here, and I don't. And it's an unhappy state when that discrepancy exists between wanting people around us and not having them, especially close people.
Dr. Kilpatrick-Johnson, the sociologist of the bunch, what causes behaviors based on loneliness? What are the behaviors that loneliness fosters?
I don't know the answer to that question.
you study human behavior, right?
I do. You know, but we tend to look more at group and interactions between people rather than the state of the mind itself, which is the beauty of having both psychology and sociology. So we do study belongingness and we do study relationships, but we're more likely to look at the environment. around the person, and so look for things that might be going on in young adults' lives that might foster, you know, this discrepancy that Dr. Lease was talking about.
Well, it's interesting. Your field of study deals with adolescence. Can you help us understand how the transition into adulthood has changed over time and how many people are saying it's become more of a lonely sort of situation?
Sure. There's a number of things that have changed. And, of course, what has changed depends on which point in history you compare to. But even looking at the last several decades, we have young people who are they're drawing out their transition to adulthood. It's longer and has some more, you know, dead ends and paths that cross and turn around, and it meanders a little bit. So, you know, some of the markers that sociologists might look to are things like when people get married and when they have children, which dramatically changes your daily life and your social network, and those things are happening later. But we still have this desire for independence, and we move off to go to school or we move out to work when we can afford it. And so we have this period of time in which young people are sort of in between. They're often likely to live alone, and they move very frequently. And so that really changes the opportunity structure for forming relationships.
Matt Pierce, you gauged your friendship and looking for friendship, looking for companionship. You sort of canvassed Craigslist. That's something that you wouldn't normally do in another era, but that's the era that we live in. Tell us why you did that.
Well, admittedly, it wouldn't be entirely something that I'd do in this area. It started out more as a story idea.
Right.
When I started getting into it, you know, it's just another form of something that I already do now. I was also taking a lot of road trips last year, and what I would do is, you know, I'd go on Facebook or I would email friends in places and be like, you know, do you know anybody in New York or Toronto or Ann Arbor? And they would hook me up with a friend, and it would be a completely random connection. Well, not completely random. I mean, you have the filter of, like, the one friend, but you know, I would go online essentially to my social networks or go on Twitter and look for people in the places where I was traveling. And I made a lot of friends that way when I was traveling, not so much in Kansas City. So actually when I popped on Craigslist, I was just searching for people to meet up with, and it started out as a story idea, but it became this anthropological sort of study in the different ways that people can be lonely in Kansas City, which is that, you know, some people have late night work shifts and they, you know, can't hang out during the day. Some people have specific hobbies. That, you know, I went with a guy who wanted to smoke a hookah but couldn't get any of his friends to go with him. He didn't seem like a particularly lonely or wanting guy, but, you know, he had this hobby that no one else would do with him. And then I also met a woman who was a little bit more of a shut-in. You know, she hadn't really gone out on a social date of any kind, not like a romantic date, but just like, you know, going out to meet friends in like 2 or 3 months, I think. And, you know, and sexual identity stuff too. There were a lot of people who said that they were gay, and you know, they were looking for other people in the area, and so it just becomes a display of the different ways that, you know, like your identity and your hobbies can manifest themselves into a kind of isolation when you're looking to, you know, share some kind of activity or, you know, share just living life the way you want to live it with other people. And so when you have the internet, it breaks down the barriers where you can find those other people who are into the things that you're into, and you can kind of pick and choose, almost as if you're going to Walmart and, you know, pick, you know, friend B who likes to smoke, you know, hookah right off the shelf, and you can make that choice. It's much more, it's almost a little bit consumerist in a way. Consumerist is probably not the right word, but it's a little bit more of a market. You know, the web and social media has made that change possible. And I think that's also changed the nature of your social existence for your given young person.
We're taking a comprehensive look at the concept of aloneness today on Central Standard. Our regular contributor, Dr. Bruce Leese, is here as a professor of family medicine at KU, and we're also joined by associate psychologist Monica Kilpatrick-Johnson out of Washington State. They're chiming in on loneliness. The voice you just heard was Matt Pierce. He's the former Pitch journalist who wrote an article, "Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here?" He joins us from L.A. Meanwhile, we have people chiming in on Twitter. Leslie tweets, "I'm alone, but never lonely. My dog is great company, and I force myself to spend time with people." Susan writes, "I grew up in a military family and lived all over the country. The greater KC metro area is relatively friendly. I live in Southern Overland Park and have made some good friends. Having kids in school has helped my transition. However, I found that many people are friendly on the surface, but it's harder to break in for deeper, long-lasting friendships. People who are here already have their friends, family, and connections." That's a very, very interesting point for you, Dr. Bruce Leese. Talk about that.
Yeah, both of those were very interesting. Friendships, you're talking about the deep versus surface kinds of friendships.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll comment on both of those things. Leslie's point was a good one. Being alone and not being lonely is when you want to be alone, and there's no discrepancy there. It feels right. Having a surface versus a deep friendship, if you want a surface friendship and that's what you have, you won't feel lonely. If you have a lot of surface friendships or shallow friendships, but you want deep ones, then you'll feel that discrepancy. You'll feel lonely. So the way you feel is really a matter of whether or not you're getting what you think you want.
Monica Kilpatrick-Johnson, have the way we've chosen to interact in modern society change the transition and the differences between surface friendships and long-lasting friendships? Our guest Matt Pierce talks a lot about getting at people on Twitter, Facebook, Craigslist, et cetera. Talk about that, how that's changed our paradigm, so to speak.
Yeah, I think obviously the ways in which we can connect with people have diversified. We can find people that aren't in our geographic proximity, or we can even find them in our city without having bumped into them or known somebody in common. So, you know, we do have a more diverse set of ways to meet people, but my understanding of studies forming partnerships and even some friendships is that we still mostly make them the way that we have for a long time. We meet people through our existing friends, and we meet people through our family. And so, in part, because it brings together people with shared interests. The other way that we often make our relationships, and this is one thing that really can make it harder for young adults, is that we make them through the institutions or organizations that we're connected to. So when you're a student, you're surrounded by people who are about the same age, doing the same things, pursuing the same things, and there's a structure that allows you to interact frequently and, you know, so you can get to know each other. And, you know, in the case of high schools and colleges, there's also the structure of extracurricular activities that brings people together with shared interests. So once you move out of that, young adults do often have a place of work, although I noticed in the piece that prompted this discussion that working from home or working, you know, alone is a barrier to meeting people at work. But there's work, and then young people are also often in a period of time in which they may have grown up in a religious organization, but they fall off for a while, and then they rejoin when they have a marital partner or children. And so they're a little bit less anchored to these institutions that help foster deeper relationships. But, you know, friends of friends is still one of the major ways that we meet people.
And to follow up with you, what would you say is the difference between choosing to be alone and experiencing loneliness?
Oh, I agree completely with Dr. Leese. Yeah, it's this gap between what you're hoping for and what you have.
We're going to go to Susie in Kansas City. Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
Are you?
Go ahead. I work out of my home. I work alone and live alone. So it is, and I'm an extrovert. And I think that makes a difference in perceptions of aloneness versus loneliness as well. As an extrovert, it's critical for me to have social interaction, and living alone and working by myself, that's difficult to do. So my choice has been to seek out organizations that I can join, like I'm in Kansas City Women's Chorus. there are like-minded people there. I have found a church that I like with like-minded people there. So I go out of my way to find places to involve myself that not only helped market my sewing business, but also helped me to find more friends and enrich the surface friends into deeper friendships so that I can find a way to meet my needs. I'm not sitting around waiting for other people to search me out because I'm lonely.
Thank you very much, Susie, for joining us and helping us not feel so lonely by joining this conversation. Dr. Bruce Lees, do we vilify loners too much in this society, and does that lend itself to feelings around loneliness and balancing that higher wire act between loneliness and choosing to be alone?
Well, there's a really good book out now. It's called Quiet, and it's about introverts, opposite of what Susie was talking about as an extrovert. And the argument the author makes in Quiet is that not only do we vilify people who are alone, that we think of them as lone wolves, but we also vilify people who are introverts, and we should do neither. It takes all kinds of people to make up a world, and I believe that as long as those people are comfortable in their own skin and doing what they're doing, then that's what they should be doing. It's interesting, the question of the internet and using it for a way of connecting with people. Is it Kirkpatrick Johnson or Kilpatrick?
Kirkpatrick.
Dr. Kirkpatrick Johnson. What a pleasure to make your acquaintance. Was looking at
you as well.
Thank you. Looking at your research, I found, I don't know what you're finding, but I found one study that said adolescents are on the internet. 90% of adolescents are on the internet, and probably the other 10% lie to their parents, and they are too. it's interesting. Instant messaging is the number one way of keeping in touch with each other. But the sad thing is that far less communication skillfulness is necessary on the internet. You can multitask on the internet, and people don't generally know it. Your eye contact can be terrible. Your facial expressions can be sour. You could smell bad, and you can get away with a lot on the internet. And that's why so many people who meet on the internet are disappointed when they get together live and in person. And there's a real potential for internet addiction, which doesn't solve a loneliness problem. It only makes it worse. And that's because of the lower demands that are placed on the interpersonal process when somebody's on the internet.
And to what aspect, Monica Kirkpatrick Johnson, has this been a game changer for adolescents? We're really only looking at about a generation and a half of teenagers that have been this involved in internet, instant messaging, smartphones, Generation Text, another book calls it. Talk about that.
Well, they're very connected all the time. They're rarely away from the possibility of being with others. And I agree that interaction electronically is distinct, and it probably is better at locating things or maintaining a connection than it is forming a connection. So, one thing that we're seeing is that families are in communication a lot more than they used to be. I'm not aware of the generations involved in this conversation so far, but some people might remember, the weekly call home to mom on Sunday or something, which, my college students actually talk to their parents multiple times a day. And adolescents, interact with their parents very frequently electronically as well. So it's keeping people connected. That connection is distinct from face-to-face interaction, but it's definitely changing that sense of access to people. One thing I wonder, and this is not something I know very much about, is whether or not it becomes hard to be alone. perhaps Dr. Lees would know something about that. But
before we go to Dr. Lees,
I find them, sort of like being, oh, I'm standing here alone, I better get on my phone.
But before we talk to Dr. Lees, let's talk to the youngest person on this panel who's more likely to have experienced that, Matt Pierce. You're of the Generation Y millennial ilk, uses smartphones, uses Facebook to hook up, Twitter.
I do. Yeah.
Talk about that. Were you kind of freaking out about being alone?
No, that's the thing. And I am like completely anti, like, the sky is falling. Technology is ruining our social skills. You know, people are going to be people all the same. They'll communicate differently. But I do agree that I think there is another conversation to be had about the loss of solitude. And that's something that's completely different. Well, I mean, not that completely different, but, you know, using social media and Facebook and Twitter, I mean, it allows you to connect people much easier. I mean, we're living in a time where we're seeing sort of the erosion of these major social institutions that have, you know, that American life was once organized around, you know, having huge workplaces, you know, maybe a lot more people involved in church. You know, now I'm, you know, I was working as a freelancer. I didn't have an office place, so I, you know, I had to make friends on my own. And so, you know, social media and the internet steps in to fill the gap that we once had when we, you know, once lived much closer to our families, when we once moved around less. You know, I think this stuff helps keep us connected together in a time when, you know, the old structure of our social lives is changing.
Journalist Matt Pierce, author of a Pitch article titled "Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here," joins us from LA. We're also joined by Dr. Bruce Lees, a professor of family medicine at KU, and Monica Kirkpatrick Johnson, associate professor of sociology at Washington State University. We're discussing loneliness. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we talk about age considerations and different demographic distinctions that either exacerbate loneliness or nullify the effects of loneliness. Kansas City, are you lonely or do you choose to be alone? Today, you don't have to be either. How do you cope with your loneliness here in KC? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or post your thoughts to Facebook. We'll hear your thoughts and continue to chat with our guests. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Philosopher and theologian Paul Tillich once said that language has created the word loneliness to express the pain of being alone, and society has created the word solitude to express the glory of being alone. Today we're talking about the difference. We're talking about loneliness, particularly as it pertains to the KC metro area. We're joined by journalist Matt Pierce, author of a recent Pitch article titled "Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here?" He's talking about around here. He's talking about Kansas City, and he joins us from his new home in Los Angeles. So that was his sort of parting swan song, love letter slash personal narrative about his experiences in Kansas City. And we're also joined by regular contributor Dr. Bruce Lees, a professor of family medicine at KU, who chimes in today on loneliness and will chime in on addiction next week. The two are sort of tied up, but we won't get into that today. Also, we're joined by Monica Kirkpatrick Johnson, associate professor of sociology at Washington State University. She specializes in adolescence and the transition to adulthood. We're going to go immediately to Ted in KC because a lot of people here want to chime in on loneliness. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm fascinated by this because I've got a unique perspective, I think. My dad was in the Navy, so we moved around a lot when I was a kid. And what I found out early in life was that friendship was mostly about proximity. You make all these promises, you're going to stay in touch, and few people ever follow through. So I got that in my head early, and then most of my life has been moving around as a radio personality, and I've lived in lots of places, New York, Los Angeles, Boston, San Diego, New Orleans, among others. And I came to Kansas City as a manager, and what I found out here, the first time I'd lived in the Midwest, that this was the least friendly place I've ever lived. That
wow.
People put up a veneer of friendliness, but they are actually very wary, sort of like you had an ulterior motive in wanting to have a relationship with them. I found as manager that I couldn't be as direct here as I was in New York. You grow up in New York and you're just abrupt. Not mean you're not friendly. You just, you know, if they go into deli and the guy behind the counter says, "What do you want?" He means, "What do you want?" He isn't trying to be mean or anything. He's just trying to get his work done. And I found here in having meetings with people that I'd have to go through this preliminary conversation to sort of get them to put their veneer down so I could get to a point instead of just getting to a point. was almost like they're always thinking, what do you really want out of me? And so I think this is kind of a hard city to become friends with people because you have to get through this wariness first. And sort of anybody want to chime in on that as opposed to living on all the other coasts?
Thank you very much, Ted, for the air check there. What do you think of this veneer, Dr. Bruce Lease, that Ted talks about among Kansas Cityans? It's a very genteel thing. He says on the surface they seem polite, but underneath they're wary. Who is this coming from around, not from around these parts?
I'm going to stop being a psychologist and start being a person here and say that back in 1982, I moved here from New York, New York City in particular, is where I was born, and the cultures are absolutely different. I have to agree strongly with Ted. The cultures are different. I'm not ready to judge one better than the other. But if you're not comfortable shifting cultures, it can feel bad going in either direction. I think he said that if you go into a store and they say, what do you want? It's not because they don't like you. It's because they want to know, what do you want? And it's really refreshing to some people to move into a calmer culture here in the Midwest and to move from the Midwest to it's refreshing to some people to move east to New York, where everybody says just exactly what they think. But it's very different. If you want to know what people really think, it's a comfortable place living in New York. If you don't, it's a more comfortable place living in Kansas City.
Right. Whereas if you want to know what people really think here, you got to kind of sit down for a while, don't you?
Yeah, I got in a little bit of trouble, I'm sure, when I first got here by being what they once called a New Yorker. Now they don't, because I'm now from here more than half my life. But it's cultural. You know what? The relevance to our discussion today is that it is lonely being in a culture that you're not comfortable with. And culture, you don't have to travel across the country or out of the country to be in a new culture. Just moving from neighborhood to neighborhood can be a shocking experience if you're not comfortable with the norms and behaviors required of people in that particular neighborhood. So that can certainly be a contributor to loneliness.
Let's bring in Matt Pierce back in here on the phone from L.A., wrote a pitch article titled, Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here? Matt, you get the feeling from your article that being young, 26, 27, that age range, being young and single was part of the cause for the loneliness and isolation you felt at times. You mentioned a lot of friends getting married in their mid-20s, which is more likely here than on the coast. Was that sort of an issue here in KC?
Yeah, I would say it was. I mean, your life is just the pace and the structure of your social life is different if you were in like any kind of monogamous relationship. You know, that person is going to take up much more of your time and much more of your sort of second-degree social interactions from which you make a lot of friends are going to be a little bit more limited to, you know, who they're friends with and, you know, who you both of you are going to spend friends with. And then, you know, if you're in a relationship, you have to spend a lot of time thinking, well, you know, do we want to go out for dinner? Do we want to stay in and save money? You know, you want to go to bed at the same time. So, you know, maybe one of you isn't going to go out partying real late and, you know, the other going home early. And, like, you know, some people do that. But the pace of your social life can slow down a little bit. Your young person's social life, I guess I should qualify, is going to slow down a bit sometimes if you're in a longer-term relationship. And if you're single, I think that sort of naturally spurs people to go do more, you know, go to more restaurants, go to more bars, seek out more people, just keep motoring around. I was looking at some Forbes data that listed Kansas City, among the top 40 cities in the United States. You know, Kansas City was at the end of the pack in terms of per capita single people in the city. And so that'll affect, you know, how vibrant your nightlife is. And so
right.
How many of those interactions are going to, like, you know, result in new friendships.
And that's an interesting point because other surveys recently, at least within the last 2 years, have listed Kansas City being ranked among the worst cities for single people. Did you experience that firsthand?
It's hard to separate between, you know, what's the city and, you know,
right,
it's also traveling
right,
around
right,
a lot.
Right.
You know, but there's, you know, there's also an element of, moving around too. You know, I was only in Kansas City for about 1 year, but you know, this is a very young person thing. But you're expected to move around a lot when you're young, when you graduate from college, when you go to college. You know, when you get that first job, when you get that second job, when you get that third job, you're constantly uprooting yourself. And, you know, everyone I know, almost everyone I know has gone through that discussion of, like, you know, what do I do with this person that I'm going out with? You know, I've been dating for, like, 5 or 6 months, and now I got to move to, like, Boston or whatever. You know, do we stay together? And everybody knows that long-distance relationships are almost the worst thing in the world. And so a lot of people end up breaking up. Or they try to keep it going, and then they end up breaking up, and then they're single all over again, and, you know, they're miserable or whatever. You know, everybody has to break up almost every time they move. You know, that's not true for everybody.
Matt, are you giving away your game plan? Did that happen one time you wanted to break up with a young lady, and you said, you know what, I got to move to, like, Boston or something, so
That is terrible.
Mike, welcome to Central Standard, Mike.
What is wrong?
Yes. Pardon me. I don't know whether I'm really on subject, but anyways, let me just throw out some related loneliness. A good friend of mine who has since died, a professor at Rutgers, anyways, he used to teach a class that I would go to, and anyways, it was about... I don't know the percentages. I don't pretend to be an expert, but anyways, a lot of people are born introverts, are forced to become extroverts to survive in the school and business world and stuff like that. And I'm just wondering whether I was thinking it was more the lonely people at an older age, be it living alone like that. And whether that was really a reverting back to a comfortable situation, and I don't know whether this inmates. Anyways, that's my comments.
Thank you very much, Mike. And we'll attempt and do the best we can to answer you and your dog's questions there.
Yes, right.
All right, ahead. Thank you very much, Mike. Monica, can you address this pressure to be an extrovert starting from childhood? You know, we tell little Jimmy and Jessica, why don't you go play with the kids? If they're playing by themselves, the typical response from a parent might be, go play with the kids. Go play with the other kids. Why don't you go outside with the other kids? Maybe they don't want to.
Yeah, we do. We do have a felt obligation as parents to develop social skills. And there's all sorts of things as you get older about needing to do public speaking and work on your network skills, right? So you can network in various capacities. But, you know, the other thing about our culture is that we're sort of we're individualistic as well. And so we counsel young people to choose careers that fit them. And there's a lot of options that don't require you to be doing a lot of working with other people or, you know, interacting with people you don't know well or something like that. So, I don't know a lot about that from a professional standpoint, but just looking at sort of the family studies, I would say that there's probably a lot of push going the other way too, and saying it's okay. Books on shyness for parents and introversion and finding your passion through hobbies or, you know, other things that you might do, and, you know, all the way up to choosing a career that fits you if you're not a networker.
Dr. Leach, jump in here on that conversation about loneliness and the socialization around whether to be an introvert or an extrovert.
Well, not enough attention, I think, is paid by us humans to the importance and value of being mindful and deliberate over the course of the lifespan. And by mindfulness and deliberate, you know, it is a choice. It's not easy to go from introvert to extrovert or extrovert to introvert. It is not easy at all. I don't want anyone to get the impression I'm saying that. But it's important to be mindful and deliberate about who we are and how we want to operate in this world. And so if you are happy with one and not the other, the one you're happy with, if you're an introvert, that's the way you ought to be and not not regard much what other people think of introverts or extroverts. So I'm making that choice, I think, is really important. Developmentally, this is a little bit of a digression, but I thought this was interesting. We learn the word friend somewhere around 3 or 4 years old, and then preschool kids are involved in about 75% of preschool kids are involved in reciprocal friendships, and that rises to 80 to 90%. So when we're teenagers, so we really, whether or not we're introverted or extroverted, we want to be connected. We want to feel like we belong. We want to feel like there are others who care about us, empathize with us, value us as human beings. If we happen to do that in a quieter way, that's fine. And if we happen to do that more vociferously, that's fine too.
Vociferously.
Talking a lot.
Indeed. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR. Streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about loneliness and being alone and the difference between the two and the correlations between the two, particularly as it pertains to the KC metro area. Our guest, our journalist Matt Pierce, he's the author of a pitch article, Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here? Ended up being a seminal pitch article in before he left to go to Los Angeles. And we also have an associate professor of sociology at Washington State, Monica Kirkpatrick Johnson. And we're also joined by our regular contributor, Dr. Bruce Leese, a professor of family medicine at KU, who will return to us next week for a show about behavioral addictions. And shows on mindfulness and anger and love are also found on kcur.org. So there's definitely a plug for Dr. Bruce Leese. Matt Pierce, how did you step out of your demographic box to sort of meet people that you wouldn't normally seek out? Or didn't you?
I'm not sure if I did, which is maybe part of the problem. You know, what I would do, you know, I would say I'm an introvert, so I would spend a lot more time by myself, which is sort of you can look at all of these as compounding factors for, you know, when I write about in the piece, you know, what my experience was, you know, sharing an apartment alone, you know, being an introvert, working alone, moving to someplace recently. I think these are all, you know, accelerating factors when you put them together, and they, you know, they'll, each one of them will kind of break the, and I mean that as like a slowing verb, you know, the speed at which you make new friends. And, you know, so I'm not into clubs, so I didn't join clubs. You know, I went to the movies. I went to the movies by myself. The Cinemark has $6 tickets, and so I'd watch awful movies by myself because I will pay $6 to watch anything in a dark movie theater, you know, and I would go sit on the Latte Land patio because they had a nice patio, and I would go read out there and you could go watch people walk around. But it took a long time for any of that to manifest in any term, like any sort of, you know, new friendships or just kind of that natural, like, you know, eventually go to a place long enough, you get to know the people there. It's just what happens, you know. That's sort of the story of moving to a new place, is that eventually you make friends.
Well, Matt, you're in L.A. now. No more $6 movies. You actually kind of have to pay $6 to step outside and inhale and exhale. Sonia in Gladstone, Missouri, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, how are you doing? I have lived in Gladstone, Missouri for nearly 2 years now. I moved here from California because my brother lost his right leg. I have experienced people that have been very kind to me. I have lived in L.A., Venice Beach, Miami Beach, Key West, Atlanta, Georgia, New York. I have been around. And some of the nicest people I have met have been here in Gladstone. I've been taught that what you put out actually comes back to you. I also even had a Puerto Rican friend. Well, she's a neighbor. We didn't really become really good friends. And she even told me that she was called the N-word and here, and she said the people here were, to her, were very racist. And I said, I've never experienced that. So I'm not, you know, I'm coming to the defense of people here. I think if you are looking for something negative, it'll come at you. If you put yourself out there to be positive, it'll come at you too. So, but as far as shallow people are everywhere. It's not just here, they're everywhere. I go to church, and I find there are people, you know, when you go to church, you will find people that will reach out to you. So it's I believe it's what you put out.
Thank you.
I really do. I believe it's what you put out.
And thank you very much for that, Sonia. having been a creative vagabond and nomad myself, I find the people of Kansas City to be extremely polite and gracious. Personal biases and profession aside. Dr. Bruce Lees, go ahead.
Sonia, thank you for those comments. I think that there are numerous antidotes to loneliness for those who feel lonely and no longer want to be lonely. And you put it succinctly. I think they call that karma. What you put out there, you get back. And looking for meaning in life and finding people to share that meaning with is a lot of the antidote. I think a very powerful antidote is simply emotional intelligence. It's the ability to understand what you're feeling and what other people are feeling and trying to connect with them where they're at as well as from where you're at. And listening and empathy, those are all keys. You can go to a grocery store and meet a dozen people. If you stand in an aisle and pay attention to people who can't reach things, right, people who have kids that are crying, you know, if you reach out to people, they will reciprocate. And it's interesting because one study looked at self-improvement, and the more like self-focused a person is trying to improve themselves, the less likely it is that they'll, unless they're learning empathy and social, emotional intelligence, working on yourself doesn't get you friendships. Caring for others does a lot more of that.
Let's go to Doc in KC Mo. What up, Doc?
Hey, good morning. Great topic. I couldn't agree more with your guest when he says that you just have to be deliberate. And if you make a conscious decision that I'm going to get in the pool, I'm going to get out and get in some of these communities, there's no reason that you will be lonely. And I just want to give a few examples. One, you can sit on the sidelines and listen to the radio show, or you can pick up the phone and be part of the conversation on talk radio. I go to a lot of independent movies, usually by myself. It's real easy to strike up a conversation with somebody on the way out. You could go to one bar consistently, like Knuckleheads is a great place. You'll start to get to know people who will introduce you to other people. You'll become part of the crowd. You could follow one band, like Hearts of Darkness has a huge following. Just start going to different ones of their gigs. You will meet a lot of the same people. You can join a club like Kansas City Blues Society, Kansas City Barbecue Society, get judge training, go out and judge contests. I volunteered for Fan Fest for the All-Star Game and pulled 3 5-hour shifts. That was 100,000 people in 3 days. I had a chance to meet a lot of new people. So there's lots of ways to interact with people. And sometimes it's the person you meet that's going to introduce you to somebody else that you're going to become a good friend with or romantic with.
Well, thank you, Doc. Sounds like you got the prescription to cope with loneliness. And speaking of coping with loneliness, only in KC would you have this type of statement I'm about to read here. John writes on Facebook, try church or the Crossroads District. They're good avenues to meet people. If you're from Kansas City, you would find the wit and whimsy in that statement. Try church or the Crossroads District. Milos writes on Facebook, would be nice if we had people walking around the street. Perhaps tie this in to the final question about what cities can do to create more friendly and welcoming places. So I will tie this in to what cities can do. What can cities do? What would you say to Kansas City's planners as far as walking around, Matt?
Density. It's all about density to me. You got to just have more people creating friction, going out and sharing space together. You know, one of the really other interesting social experiments that's happening recently, you know, aside from like social media, purely from a social and use of space standpoint, is the Occupy movement. And, you know, a lot of people disagree with their politics. They're kind of out there. But one of the interesting things that they did that sucked people in that I don't think people really realized at first was that they sort of reinvented what public space was in, you know, in 21st century America, which is, you know, mostly governed by, you know, these trespassing statutes. It's, you know, a lot of them got arrested and beat up in the end. But there was sort of that draw that drew some of those protesters down there, that they could share space together, that they had an accepting place where anybody could go down to and feel welcome. That's not really something that you get very specifically in public life. You know, we have public parks, but, you know, they're okay. But, you know, any other public space that you go to, you have to pay money to get into. You know, you have to pay money to go into a movie theater. You have to pay money to go in a cafe and hang out. You know, there's not as much culture of, you know, that shared, you know, just hanging out on the sidewalk, you know, bumping into people. you know, I traveled to Cairo to work and cover some protests there, and you know, you would see that sort of reinvention of public space, you know, in Tahrir Square, where they're, you know, having protests again now. You know, you'd have that same, you know, you're sharing a public space together, you're there for a common cause, and so you make a lot of friends that way. But, you know, just in Cairo in general, which is a very different city than anything we have in the United States, highly dense, you know, it's a much more open in terms of social interaction with strangers. The norms are much more open. You know, people talk to each other much more easily. They get more involved with each other much more easily. And so you can walk out the door with the sense that anything could happen if you're in Cairo and, you know, some other cities in the Middle East. And, you know, in the United States, we're much more reserved. Like, we have many more personal freedoms and personal liberties. But to a large extent, we've used those to kind of enclose ourselves and minimize any possibility of friction, anything that might make us slightly uncomfortable, whether it's an uncertain situation or, you know, overbearing parents or whatever, or, you know, a business we don't like or something. You know, we can just avoid it, or we can get an apartment by ourselves, or we can move away. You know, we've all the things that we can tailor, that we can buy for ourselves to that we think improve our life, also end up, you know, in many circumstances, sort of limiting us socially. So there are different worlds out there. I mean, it's I'm all about density, more about walkable spaces, more about sharing space.
And speaking of which, Matt, to stop you there, let's get Monica Kirkpatrick Johnson back into this conversation. What are the differences between the way we cope with loneliness in the U.S. versus other countries?
Well, again, I can't speak necessarily to the coping process, but I can say something about the, you know, the environment that would foster more loneliness than others, and it has to do with the way that we form and maintain relationships. So, in societies that are very, very family centered, you're going to have a lot of family relationships and, you know, multiple generations interacting. If you've got places that facilitate young people moving off onto their own and not being sort of connected with families or marrying quickly, you're going to have more sort of opportunity to have this gap between the relationships you want and the relationships that you have. So it has a lot to do with the way that we structure our social relationships.
Thank you very much. We've been talking about loneliness with Matt Pierce. He's with the LA Times now, and he's the author of the pitch article, Can a Guy Just Make Some Friends Around Here? You just heard the voice of Associate Professor of Sociology at Washington State, Monica Kirkpatrick Johnson, and of course, Dr. Bruce Lease, a professor of family medicine at KU, who will return to us next week for a show about behavioral addictions. Thank you all for coming today. And be sure to log in to KCUR.org for today's show or other Central Standard programming and podcast. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. UpToDate ranks our presidents with political journalist Robert Mary coming up next. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.